Hello and welcome to the Karate Priest Podcast. I'm your host, Father Daniel Duplantis. I'm a martial artist, musician, airman, and a priest of the Diocese of Houma Thibodeau. One of my other passions in life is teaching, especially teaching about the Catholic faith. Catholicism is a very deep faith. Jesus himself told Peter to put out into the deep for a catch. The most significant answers to life's most important questions often lie deep beneath the surface. Many people have questions about their faith. Through this podcast, my aim is to explore these questions and encounter incredible people along the way. Their stories show that God is constantly at work in our lives every single day, sometimes in the ordinary and sometimes in the extraordinary. Some of the topics treated in this podcast may be sensitive or controversial, but their discussion holds the key to truly living as God created us to live, which is to say that He created us to live in authentic freedom, loving Him above all else. Thank you for joining me on this journey of faith, and I hope you enjoy this podcast. Hey guys, and welcome back to the Karate Priest Podcast. Today we are wrapping up our study of the temperaments with this third and final part. If you remember last time, we talked about really just the temperaments in detail, some characteristics, strengths and weaknesses. How do you motivate the temperaments? And then also what is maybe a good spiritual life for the temperaments? And so today what I'd like to do is focus more on how does this play out in relationship, perhaps marriage and family life? And this is something that if you're married or if you're not married, you can value all this information as well. Because guess what? The reality is we all belong to a family. We deal with people in families every single day. And so it's so important to really take account of the dynamics in families as regards the temperaments. And so here's the thing. When it comes to marriage, it's so important to understand your spouse's temperament. I use this a lot in marriage prep because you'll see where there's some areas of conflict. And this is why I like that my diocese uses the focus instrument. Focus is an instrument that we use to kind of see where's communication between the couple good? Where does it need some work? Where are they on the same page? And where are they not quite on the same page? And helping them to kind of move beyond some of these difficulties. And so for them, it's important for them to understand each other's temperament, to foster better interaction, intimacy, communication. And so you'll see where their strengths are going to come out and to help also with curtailing some of these weaknesses that we mentioned in the previous episode. And so what I'm going to do is kind of talk about some of these spouses individually. And you'll see how each of these temperaments as a spouse will tend to react to certain situations. And so we have the commanding choleric companion. The choleric spouse tends to be very hardworking, tends to be very much the breadwinner. Again, they're achievement-based, and so they like the sense of identifying their success with what they do. But again, they tend to be very dictatorial, and so they think they're right most of the time. They tend to be very charismatic and energetic as a suitor once they're dating. But once they're married, their energy tends to really get diverted more towards providing, being a providing spouse. And so you might tend to wonder, well, what happened to the romance? You know, what happened to this person that really just swept me off my feet? And now it's kind of not the same anymore. And so what happens with the choleric is that sometimes they'll tend to try to win you over. And once they feel like they've won you over, then you might see a drop off because then they feel like they've won you over and you're committed now in marriage. And so I don't have to quite continue to woo as much as I used to. As parents, I think of the choleric as being almost like a drill sergeant parent, very direct and very urgent with things. They're the ones that are going to tell the kids to pick up their toys, to clean the room, do chores, and be in bed by a certain time. Now the sanguine. The sanguine spouses tend to be the life of the party, just like any sanguine is. They place a lot of priority on relationships, and so they're very eager to please. Maybe not so much the providing sense as the choleric, but definitely want to please. They tend to be attention-seeking as well, and so you'll see that they try to do things to stand out. sometimes they want to look at only the bright side of things. And so when things get serious, when serious problems do come up, they tend to want to not want to talk about these things. They will almost avoid and beat around the bush so as not to talk about serious things. They like glamorous and shiny things. And so with a sanguine spouse, I would really keep an eye on your bank account at all times. I would really be careful with credit cards as well, because they tend to like shopping. Again, they like bright, colorful things, and they'll be very impulsive in buying these things. So again, with them, watch your credit cards. As a parent, the sanguine tends to be very involved in their child's life, almost to the point where they live vicariously through their child's life. And so they have to be very careful to find this distinction between the fact that I cannot be my child's best friend. Like, there has to be a distinction between my role as a parent, as someone who's there for them, that there is this level of authority. And because if that becomes blurred, then a child can become very rebellious, especially in the teenage years. And because if you've lost that sense of authority, you have a hard time getting that back. The melancholic. The melancholic spouse, they tend to value ideal love, again, because they value things like ideals themselves, the perfection of things. And so they have a longing for ideal love. They're very deep people, so they love things like poetry, perhaps romantic movies. A melancholic wife might be the person to enjoy a rom-com or things like that. They're likely to accept a concept of holy sex, and wanting intimacy to feel like it's a higher spiritual plane and not just being there simply for the physical, very much attuned with the sense that this is something sacred. They're the most likely to see sex as something that is holy. And they can sometimes expect their spouse to read their minds. So for the melancholic, communication is key. They have, again, the sense of ideals, and they think that everybody else might be aware of this ideal as well, and it's not as apparent to everybody else. And so communication has to be key. They have to actually open up about and be very clear and direct about what their expectations are. As parents, the melancholics tend to reinforce good morals. So if for them, if they're raising a child, their four-year-old might answer from the Baltimore Catechism to know, love, and serve God as the purpose of the Christian life or the purpose of life in general. And now the phlegmatic. The phlegmatic spouse is very, very loyal. What's funny with the phlegmatic is it's interesting to figure out who made the first move, especially because they might not be the person to initiate a romantic relationship. Again, they tend to not want to initiate much at all. And it's funny when you get to that temperament combination, we'll talk about that in a little bit as well. But for them, they win their spouse over with simply just their gentleness, their humility, their ability to listen, and their ability to understand. They're not vain people by any stretch of the imagination. They tend to miss hints from their spouse for more romance for that reason. And also with phlegmatic spouses, it's important to remember that facial expression is not always a true reflection of what they're thinking or feeling. Just like the melancholic, they won't show a lot of emotion. I guarantee they're probably pretty happy to be married to you. But sometimes their outward expression might not show that because it's just not part of their temperament. It's not part of their makeup. As parents, the phlegmatic tends to be very nurturing, but sometimes may have a hard time disciplining a child. And so we'll often maybe delegate the discipline to the other parent when it comes to that. So now let's talk about some combinations. And this is where things tend to get really, really fun. Let's talk about some opposite combinations here. And there's really a truth to the fact that opposites attract. And the reason for that, especially in marriage, is that where one person is weak, the other person is strong and vice versa. And so they see the other person's strength covering their weakness. And so that's why opposites really do attract in marriage. There's a really true complementarity there. You already have the complementarity between husband and wife, but then this complementarity between opposite temperaments is really, really full, kind of fills out that sense of complementarity. And so for them, what attracts them is this sense where one is strong, the other one is weak. On the other hand, if there's an unwillingness to get out of the comfort zone, it leads to miscommunication, perhaps a lack of empathy, really just this lack of ability to understand what the other person's going through. Again, they have opposite temperaments. So for couples who have the polar opposite temperament, They have to be able to start thinking at some point, why might my spouse feel this way? Because I don't feel this way at all. Again, trying to see exactly what the opposite temperament thinks. If they can become careless, what happens is the strength can be manipulated as a death blow to the opposite temperament. So virtue has to be exercised here. And I think this is extremely important. I try to tell people this all the time. Shame is an awful motivator. I think you should never shame someone to doing something. To say, so-and-so does this for me, so you should too. Like trying to get people to motivate by shame hardly ever works. It just makes them feel bad. You might get them to do what you want, but at the same time, that feeling of failure perhaps will always linger with the sense that they couldn't be motivated to do something simply because you shamed them to do it. And so there's always this maybe negative connotation or a negative memory associated with that. For opposite temperaments, teamwork is key. Compromise is extremely important. I remember working with one couple that the husband was a blue-collar father, but he was an introvert. And the wife was a stay-at-home mother, and she was extroverted. So when the husband would come home, he's been working all day. He's been around people all day. So for him, his legitimate temperament need is to find quiet time to decompress. But for his extroverted wife, who's been at home with the child all day, who doesn't have much social interaction with anybody else, when he comes home, guess what she wants to do? She wants to talk with him. She wants to have conversation. She wants to have a relationship with him. And so you see how in that example, there's two legitimate temperament needs, but they require a heck of a lot of compromise to meet those needs. And so empathy is extremely important for these. Now with some more specific ones, these are going to be neighboring temperament combinations, or actually we're going to stick with some of these more specific opposites. Let's look at a little bit at the choleric and the phlegmatic. So again, these are opposites, the choleric being your extroverted thinker and your phlegmatic being your introverted feeler. So for them, it's important for the phlegmatic to not sacrifice themselves every single time the choleric has any kind of desire that they want to do, any kind of goal that they're trying to achieve. The phlegmatic has legitimate needs that also have to be met. They can't be the one sacrificing all the time. Eventually, they will burn out when it comes to that. They have to have their needs met also. They might be more flexible and they might be more patient with giving up and sacrificing some of their own needs, but eventually they will have to have their needs met also. For the choleric, they should never say something like, you know, you've been such a bump on the log, you know, things like that. Like, again, shame does not work well in any of these relationships. The phlegmatic really has to try not to withdraw so much. They should have some kind of active part, not just in the relationship, but also with the children as well. They can't take a back seat in everything. So for them, it's important for any marriage, but especially for the choleric and the phlegmatic, never to go to bed angry with each other. So here we have another pair of opposites. This is our sanguine and our melancholic. So for them, the melancholic is often sometimes baffled by the sanguine's almost disregard for significance, while the sanguine is almost amused by the pessimism and the nitpickiness of the melancholic. And so you can see how there might be some tension that will come from this. So for them, this combination requires a lot of compromise in terms of that social versus personal time. Again, kind of with the example I just used, because they both have legitimate needs. This happens a lot with my parents too, actually. My dad is actually a sanguine and my mom is a melancholic. And so when they go to socials, I see this happen all the time. My dad could talk to a wall and my dad could teach that wall how to catch a fish. My mom will go to things, but she tends to be very reserved. She tends to just kind of sit quietly somewhere and she doesn't want to stay for long. And so the way that a couple like my mom and dad will have to settle this is to say that we're going to go to this particular function and we're going to stay for this amount of time. Like by having that agreement, you're meeting both persons' needs. You're meeting the social need of the extrovert to say, we're actually going to go to this function because the sanguine or the choleric needs to be around people. The extrovert likes being around people. Whereas for the phlegmatic, because that tends to be very draining for them, they say, okay, we're going to go, but we're not going to stay the whole time. We're not going to stay for a really long period of time. We're going to go, we're going to say hi, we're going to eat, enjoy people's company, but we're not going to stay until they kick us out of the bar, right? That kind of thing. again, these compromises are extremely important to meet the needs of both parties. So with that, there's also combinations where you see not exactly the same temperament, but like the neighboring ones. So for the choleric and the melancholic, they have in common the sense of thinking or the sense of being principled people. And so they're going to really relate well on principles. What happens is, again, one is introverted, one's extroverted. But if you notice, because they tend to be both principled persons, they're going to have this kind of collective sense of not being so attuned to people's feelings. So between a melancholic and a choleric, there might be a battle and a struggle for control, but they will have an appreciation for peace and quiet. There's going to be a great emphasis on perfection, on achievement, especially in their kids. They're going to want their kids to really just, you know, come home with straight A's or really just be the top of the class. Their expectations will be very, very high. And so kind of along that line, we're going to stick with the choleric in this case. And now we're going to put the choleric with the sanguine. This is, I would say, definitely a go-getter kind of couple. The choleric and the sanguine will like challenging adventures. And I use those words because that's two words from each of these temperaments. Challenging adventures, the choleric will love the challenge and the sanguine will love the adventure. They're very highly involved, but for different reasons. Their motivation for being involved is different. So again, for the sanguine, they want to be involved because they like the relationship aspect. The choleric will be involved because they love the achievement aspect. There has to be also a teaching and focus on forgiveness. And they can teach each other both focus and forgiveness. But again, because they're extroverts, they tend to be very active in the world around them, very active in the community. And so perhaps spending alone time together should be a priority, not to give all of their time to every single person outside the house, but to really foster a good, stable sense of home, especially once they start welcoming children into the world. So here's another combination now on the flip side with both of our feelers or our people-oriented temperaments, and that's our sanguine and the phlegmatic. So for these two, a sanguine and phlegmatic couple, the sanguine's going to really have to help the phlegmatic come out of the shell, while the phlegmatic provides balance to the sanguine's impulsivity. Again, the sanguine flips from thing to thing. The phlegmatic is very much stay the course, and so they will help to balance each other out. But again, compromise is needed. They have to be very careful that they don't become complacent with things. Again, because they're both people persons, they're very much attuned to people's feelings. They can't just let everything go because it hurts someone's feelings. They have to be willing to step in to recognize truth, goodness, beauty, again, these transcendentals for what they are and realize these things to be truths and act accordingly. And this couple will really need to step out of their comfort zone to discipline their children, specifically, again, because of that. They're not going to want to discipline their kids. The sanguine's probably going to want to have fun with the kids, and the phlegmatic just doesn't want to really hurt their feelings. At some point, you do have to put the parent hat on. You have to put your foot down. And so discipline for this couple might be a little bit more challenging. And then really perhaps a more even keeled couple would be the phlegmatic and the melancholic. So these are both of your introverted temperaments. So with them, you have one who shares that kind of people-oriented mentality, one on the thinking side. But again, they will very much have the sense of quiet, steady relationship. The phlegmatic will probably help to calm the anxiety of the melancholic. And then the melancholic will help to probably instill a sense of purpose in the phlegmatic. The melancholic really needs to be careful of nitpickiness because, again, the phlegmatic sometimes for them because they don't initiate much and for them, any small achievement is an achievement of itself. If a melancholic becomes too nitpicky with the phlegmatic might just shut down entirely, might see hopelessness in a situation and not want to continue. So a phlegmatic melancholic couple will probably have a very dedicated prayer life. Both of these temperaments are very much oriented to the interior life because they're introverts. They like to take that time for introspection. So they will probably collectively have a very deep spiritual life together, very much dedicated to prayer. They're very reliable parents, but it's important not to let the house become too serious, where the house tends to be almost a perpetual state of Lent. Where there's kind of the sense of no joy, you know, definitely be able to liven things up in their home. And then we have relationships where you have both couple, both parties of the couple are the same exact temperament. And these are always fun to look at as well. So let's look at this particular one is the choleric. Oh boy, these are going to conquer the world. Again, you have two people here whose job or whose focus really is on achievement, on action. They are going to be the most go-getter couple out there, and they're probably going to dominate the world together. The problem that they need to watch out for is that they don't have this all chiefs and no Indians mentality. They will, again, tend to argue for control because they are both cholerics in that regard. So they have to respect each other's spheres, to respect each other's boundaries, perhaps. Even in a marriage, there are still boundaries to be upheld. And so when they start to argue, this is a fun thing too. If you see a choleric couple arguing, things are probably okay. It might seem pretty bad because if you remember, the choleric likes to argue for fun. So if it seems like they're arguing, perhaps it's just because this is their way of getting frustrations out. They're probably actually bonding over arguing together. It's probably not as bad as it seems on the outside. They just love to argue. But for them, again, they're a go-getter couple because there's a high value on success and achievement. As parents, they will probably demand a lot out of their kids. In the classroom, on the football field, wherever they find their kids are going to be, there's going to be a high emphasis on success. We don't just do things because we enjoy them. We do things to do them well, to be accomplished in these things. And to be aware also that sometimes you have to take that step back. For them, they're going to have to learn to take that step back from the achievement mindset and simply to enjoy things for the sake of enjoying them. Otherwise, things become a chore. Activities become no longer palatable because there's really no sense of enjoying. It's all for achievement. So it has to be also a sense of patience as well. The choleric couple will tend to want things done immediately. And so for them, they really have to be patient, especially if a choleric couple has a phlegmatic child. Patience is going to be of the utmost virtue to get them motivated, to get that phlegmatic child to accomplish things, but to get them to see self-worth as well. And then we have the phlegmatic couple. And this is the one that I probably scratch my head at the most, honestly, because when you think about phlegmatics, we think of people who, as we've mentioned before, tend to not initiate things. So the big question for a phlegmatic couple is, who made the first move on who? Who started the romance? And so there's always this thought of like, wow, like who started wooing who? How did this happen? This is almost like two non-starters that somehow got started. That is the golden question for the phlegmatic couple. And yes, it is possible. And this the beautiful thing about them, there's normally a great simplicity about their relationship. They're not likely to get bored with each other. They're very faithful. Phlegmatics are loyal to begin with. So a phlegmatic couple will probably be very, very loyal to each other. Very easygoing, but can probably be taken aback by rebellious behavior from their kids. They really need to stretch themselves in terms of discipline, though, because as a phlegmatic couple, they're definitely not going to want to discipline. And if you have a very strong-willed child, especially a choleric child, that's the opposite temperament from them, they're going to have to learn how to control a strong-willed child so that the child doesn't just run all over them. Then we have, perfectionism here, the melancholic and melancholic. So you have two melancholics in a relationship. So for them, there's little to no problems distinguishing boundaries. They will make sure the boundaries are very, very clear. They tend to compartmentalize well. And so they will make sure that family life and work does not cross over. They tend to stay in their own neat little boxes. It's going to be very important for a melancholic couple not to micromanage everything, especially for their children. They're going to want to be micromanaging for the sake of perfection. They don't want their kids to mess up. They want their kids to do well. Again, they don't like imperfection. And so it's going to be very easy to nitpick on things. They will have to be patient, kind of like the choleric will, simply in terms of allowing mistakes, allowing things to happen, because we learn well from our mistakes most of the time. Once we realize we've made a mistake, we tend to not make them as often in the future again. So they will also have a very deep spiritual life as a couple. But for them, what's going to be very important is to actually make time for fun, especially if, let's say, if a melancholic couple has a sanguine child. I love always bringing the opposite temperament child into this. because this is important. How do you deal as a melancholic couple with a sanguine child? For them, you have to be able to have some fun. You have to be able to get out of your comfort zone to experience the sense of adventure that a sanguine child thrives on. So for them, there's going to be maybe the sense of, you know, going whitewater rafting, or, you know, maybe not so much skydiving, but doing activities that are, you know, fun and not just simply analytical in that sense for their children who might be more of an extroverted temperament. So that's really the temperaments in marriage. What we're going to talk about next is perhaps the child's temperament. Again, because you have the two parents, but at the same time, however many kids you have, they can each have a different temperament. If you look at the authors of the book, Art and Lorraine Bennett, they say that they have four kids, and each of their children is one of the four temperaments. And so for them, they really did write the book on how this looks for children. And so how do you deal with children of varying temperaments? And so a lot of the stuff is what they say with motivation as well. And so what they'll say is that for a choleric, what to do for a choleric child? They say to acknowledge their achievements and contributions. Again, because that's what they place a high value of success. So acknowledge that, promote that. Give them opportunities to compete. I know there's some activities where there's not, you can participate in some activities not for a competition basis, but for enjoyment. But if you can, and this is the thing, like, you know, with martial arts, we have that also. We have an aspect where you're learning simply how to defend yourself. You're learning the art simply for the sake of learning the art, but we also have a competitive side. So allowing them to compete is important. Again, giving them good reasons for things, because I said so, is not a good explanation for them. And be very, very careful to pick your battles with a choleric child. Otherwise, you might be arguing with them all the time. Why? Because a choleric likes to argue. A choleric child will argue with you if you allow them to. And so pick those battles very, very carefully. But especially help them with really cultivating a sense of empathy and being able to listen to others, to be attentive to the feelings and thoughts of others as well. Things perhaps not to do for a choleric child. What Art and Lorraine will say is, don't punish them for arguing. Cholerics would be great on debate teams. And so if they become more of a debater and an argumenter in the family, then what you need to do is not punish them for that, but maybe help to curtail that. Don't cut off any sense of competition. Again, they thrive on this. So if you don't give them any chance to compete, then their self-value will certainly diminish. Don't control everything. Again, they like to have some sense of control, but be flexible with what you allow them to control. Do not try to break their will, because they're very, very strong-willed people. And don't take things personally with them. Again, they like to argue for the sake of arguing. Unless they actually are being disrespectful, then they have crossed the line. But do not take their arguments to be personal. Here we go with the melancholic. Some things to do for the melancholic. Support them in developing initiative. Help them to get started with things. Same thing with the phlegmatic. Helping them to start on something. For the melancholic, it's important to see the big picture and perhaps also to stop and smell the roses. They're so detail-oriented. They tend to really worry about the future sometimes. So getting them to stop and live in the present moment is really, really important for the melancholic child. Give them quiet time. Just because they're shy doesn't mean that something's wrong. Again, they're introverted, so they recharge by having that alone time. Do not force them to perpetually be in a state of being around people. They need that time to recharge. But help them also to develop good social skills, like eye contact, firm handshakes. You know, all these social cues are really, really important. You can't let them always be by themselves. They do have to develop social skills. Otherwise, when they're forced in the future to go into social situations, they could very easily break some boundaries there simply because they haven't had the practice in doing so. The melancholic child don'ts. What not to do with melancholic child. Again, don't punish them for shyness. Don't treat them harshly or unfairly, because they, again, pride themselves on justice. And so it's very important to be fair with a melancholic child. Don't allow them to isolate themselves, because if they perpetually isolate themselves again, you're going to start seeing some social issues. And don't take the bait in terms of negativity. They might be very pessimistic. They might be very negative. don't let them drag you down as well. If anything, help them to be more positive. Help them to see the glass as being more half full. Now the sanguine child. Sanguine child, maybe some things to do with them. Organization. You're going to definitely have to help a sanguine child organize things. Help them with making a schedule, with making a routine, and helping them stick to it. This is really important for them to find some sense of structure. Give them good ideals to pursue. Again, because they tend to be people-oriented, they might lose sense of the principles behind things. So help them with guiding the things that they pursue. Help them also to reflect, because again, the sanguine tends to be almost on this kind of superficial level, a very surface level of things. So helping a sanguine child with depth is important as well. Good friendships is important, not just any friendships, because again, they tend to like having a large group of friends. It's important to help them make sure that they have good friendships and not, we would say, vicious as in sinful friendships. So maybe some don'ts for the sanguine child. Don't take away their fun. They need that. They do need the sense of adventure, the sense of fun to help them just with day-to-day living. Don't leave them entirely to their own devices. This one's really, really important because, again, they do need that sense of guidance. Otherwise, they will just flit off and do whatever their impulses tell them to. Sanguine children need a social life, so don't deny them of this either. They do need to be around people. So just like we would say, don't completely isolate the melancholic child. Don't always let the sanguine be around people. Help them to learn how to have quiet time to be at peace with themselves. But at the same time, don't deny them constantly the sense of not being able to have a social life. And then with the phlegmatic, how to help your phlegmatic children. Help them look to the future. Again, they tend to be very even keel in the moment, but help them to learn how to plan. Help them to see that there is a timeline for things that have to be done. The phlegmatic is certainly a procrastinator, so help them to get moving with things. And so like helping them with schedules, just like with the sanguine, but perhaps a slightly different purpose, just help them with timelines for things. Most of the time they know it has to be done. A lot of the time is helping them to understand the timeline and the motivation for it. Praise them for cooperation, you know, give them compliments for their positive attitudes, help them to become a team player is really, really important. But help them also to develop leadership skills. Phlegmatics can be leaders, and some of the best leaders are phlegmatics. You know, I think of my current bishop who is going to be leaving us soon for the Archdiocese of Louisville, Kentucky. Bishop Fobb is someone who I'm pretty darn sure is a phlegmatic. He's very easygoing, very even keeled. But he is a wonderful leader because he is very much attuned with the feelings of his people, and he steps up when he has to. He's very reluctant sometimes to do things, but he knows when he has to do it, and he is a wonderful leader because of that. And some don'ts for the phlegmatic child. It's important not to ridicule them. And I mentioned this previously as well. Do not take over for them. Don't take work away from them. Give them something they can be proud of themselves. It's important not to constantly nag them. If you nag them, they're definitely not going to follow the timeline you want them to. But some encouragements is very, very good. And again, don't let them withdraw into isolation, kind of like with the melancholic. They do need some social time as well. Don't punish them for wanting to withdraw, but at the same time, do not let them completely isolate. And so that is temperament in marriage and family life. And so with that, this concludes really our dive into the temperaments. I hope these last three episodes have been fun, have been informative, have been enjoyable. And hopefully you can start incorporating some of these things into your daily life, just with the people that you interact with every single day, noticing some of these differences between your temperament, their temperament. How do you make these compromises? Again, this is supposed to be extremely practical, but at the same time, very, very important for self-growth as we continue to grow into the people that God created us to be, which is to say he created us to be saints. So with that, thank you for joining me on this podcast and have a great day. Thank you for joining us for today's episode of The Karate Priest. If you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and like The Karate Priest on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and subscribe to the YouTube channel. If you're ever in South Louisiana, come visit me at the Cathedral of St. Francis de Sales in Houma. If you have any questions or comments about the show, you can also email me at thekaratepriest@gmail.com. Your questions are welcomed and may be used in future episodes. May the blessing of Almighty God, the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit come down on you and remain with you forever. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Please be sure to rate and review this episode. This podcast is produced by Todd Fisher and distributed by Metacortex Publishing. This podcast is copyright. Any previously trademarked or copyright content is used by permission. Information and opinions stated in this podcast should not be construed as medical advice. Please be sure to visit the official website for the International Association of Metatomics at metatomics.org or find us on social media for other unique content.